I'm not one to criticize anyone else's business plans. There's probably people a lot smarter than I am, see things that I don't see. So I just look at the raw details of what's in front of me. And I say, does this make sense for me to lend on? Do I feel safe and comfy? And if I do, and if it's a good enough return, that's always variable by every deal is different. But if the return's good relative to the comfort level, then I'll usually just green light it.
Welcome to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate Show. Whether you are an active or passive investor, we'll teach you how to scale your real estate investing business into something big.
Blake Selby of SelbyRentals.com is a private investor that likes to explore the many revenues of real estate. One of the fun and interesting facts about Blake is that he actually got into real estate from owning a gym. But, you know, that's not what we're here to talk about today. Either way, Blake, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it, Sam.
Hey, man, that's a hoot. You know, how did you go from, well, I got three questions I always ask everybody, but I do want to talk about it. How did you go from owning a gym to being an investor in real estate?
The quick 30-second version is owned a gym, had it for 3 years, turned it around, sold it to a chain, used some of that money to parlay into owning over 300 rental units, and then sold about 2/3 of those, large profit, enough to be able to start a private lending operation and still own the other things I had outright and pay off all my debt. So that's the essentially how we got to this point. So, you know, now we've got just our assets in the company are about 10 million, and then our debt is about 100,000. So that gives you an idea where we're at.
Gotcha. Man, that's absolutely fantastic. And I think you've hit the three questions I ask everybody who comes on the show, which is where'd you start, where are you now, and how'd you get there? And I think you win the award for the most succinct way of packing all that information in. So well done. Hey, I'm looking forward to jumping in today. So you guys, you own the rentals. Mm-hmm. You got 300 of them, which is a lot of single family rentals to own.
Yes.
And what prompted you to sell those off?
We were blessed with buying into an inclining market. And so when we picked a lot of these up in 15, 16, 17, when it came time for 2019, 2020, we had already appreciated so much. And a lot of these we got sold just before the pandemic and a little bit into it, which in my opinion was a great time to sell, especially for the types of assets we were selling. We weren't in the $500,000 home spaces or anything like that. We were in the lower end rentals. So for us, the appreciation from COVID didn't really happen with that lower range as much. So we definitely sold it at the right time, I feel. So,
man, that's fantastic. And then you said, hey, why not go into the private money lending business? I mean, that's kind of a next logical step, maybe. I don't know. How did you get involved in that?
I had been doing some lending concurrently with the rentals alongside, but it was a very small part of the business, less than 10%, until 2020, when it became about 80% of the business. And now it's almost exclusively, what we do. So it's been a great path forward. It's obviously less management intensive. It's sort of a binary option. I'm either paid or I'm not, right? And so, but there's only two outcomes that happen. And then of course we may have to do dispositions if we don't get paid, but that's pretty rare. So,
right. That's tremendous. Break those numbers down for me. You use the numbers, 10 million in equity, 100,000 in debt. What does that mean?
So we've got a combination of real estate assets. We own, obviously, our own private mortgages that we generated, and then also some mortgages that we've financed some of the homes to folks. And so when you combine all that together, we've got a couple of smaller sister companies that we own. And all of that together is about 10 million in just overall asset value. The company value would obviously be higher, but the asset value is there. And then we just have a little baby $100,000 loan on our office building, where we run our office out of, and that's our only debt. So we paid off all the bank loans.
Wow.
We have no investors, no bank loans. We don't have any private loans. All of it's wiped. We're just 100%, and so it's just myself as the owner of the company, 100%. And then I've got 10 full-time employees, 5 which work in the office, and then 5 VAs. So they each go pretty much 40 hours a week. So
that's a light team.
And it is. Lean and mean.
Yeah. Dave Ramsey would be proud of you. On the debt-free, except for $100,000 loan, which I'm just really curious. I mean, it seems like at that point, it'd be more of a nuisance than just writing the check and being done with it.
It's just like, it's 3%, And so we're going to just wait till it, balloons in 5 more years or something, and then we'll just pay it off then. But we just have, it's already set up on, to be paid every month. So we just didn't bother with it.
Right. The $800 a month that costs you does not matter. That's really intriguing. Absolutely love that. I mean, one, that you have a light team. Two, I mean, in this day and age, like everyone preaches debt against real estate, and you're kind of the opposite on your business side. And yet the very thing you're doing on the other end of the spectrum is leveraging that against real estate for your borrowers. So talk to us about that experience, you know, starting that out, but then really growing the team around that. And then especially as it comes to vetting your borrowers as to making sure you're making sound investments, because if you're the 100% owner of their company, you're the one that's standing to lose.
I would say that we're an asset lender is the best description of what we do. So the borrowers, while we love our borrowers, we really don't look at the borrowers that hard when we look at a deal. We're looking more at the asset itself, which is very helpful for some flippers, landlords, especially when they've got deals that are in a weird price range. Like let's say under $50,000, right? Let's say they've got a deal there. Banks really don't want to mess with it. And the fees that are associated with private lenders and banks often and hard money lenders with under 50 grand can be excessive, you know, high percentages. So we do zero upfront fees on any of our loans, and then we do no monthly payments. And so with those two things being there, it kind of makes us a unicorn. And we're also a little lower LTV. So we're a bank might be 75% LTV. We're closer to 50% because again, we're not running credit. We're not looking at the borrower if they can repay us. We assume, you know, from the jump that we're not going to get repaid from the start. And then we work backwards from there. So we just start worst case scenario and often we're pleasantly surprised, but we have to kind of look at the downside first and then go backwards. So
yeah, that's really intriguing. Well, not only is it a weird price range, which you're having, obviously you're right, because this is your business. But I mean, I've been there when we first started out, and that, especially here in the Memphis market, you could find houses for under 50 grand. It's just like impossible to finance. So
yeah, we do higher prices too. We just, that's just one example of kind of an area where we find a lot of success, you know, under the 50,000, certainly under, I would say 80% of our loans are probably under 200,000, you know, to give you an idea.
Are you lending just in the Iowa, Davenport, Iowa area? Are you nationwide? Where are you?
I would say we're nationwide, but we're not in every state yet. I'd like to be. So we're probably in about 12, 13 states right now and pushing out more and more as time goes on.
Right. And you said you have no outside private lenders who are funding the loans you're writing. That's a common business model in the lending space, where especially for a private money lender like yourself to bring in outside capital, build a fund, and then lend from that fund. Why have you chosen not to go that route? And does that cap your potential, you know, how many loans you guys can do?
So what I thought about, you know, when I started this is basically to focus on the core business, which is that. And if half of my team is dedicated to sourcing outside money, that's half of my team that I don't have, you know, sourcing the, I guess, the deals to use our money on. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, with that being said, I like keeping everything streamlined, keeping everything in house. I'm not beholden to anyone else as far as their terms. And I'll finance some deals that I know no one else would ever touch. So that's, you know, kind of helpful. And they wouldn't touch them because they don't understand them. It's not because they're bad deals. They're actually fantastic deals. For example, someone who has a 400 credit score, right? I might finance that person, right? Whereas somebody else would say, oh my gosh, I'm not touching this person with a 10-foot pole. They could be in a bankruptcy and I might still finance them. So these are all things to, you know, to consider. So we're okay with borrowers that are very, very, you know, subprime, I would say.
Yeah, that's really intriguing. And I guess you're offsetting that risk by, you know, keeping your LTV very low.
Yes.
But let me ask you this. If you have a borrower with a 400 credit score, it's unlikely that they're sitting on a pile of cash where they can turn around and say, oh, okay, well, I'm giving the owner 70%, you know, 70% of what the house is worth. And so they got to find the other 20%. How do those two work together?
So what ends up happening is you do actually find that some people that are cash heavy are credit poor, which is shocking. I never would have thought that. It's like, how can those two things exist simultaneously? And usually it's just a timing issue where they've gotten maybe a settlement or an inheritance or some kind of a huge chunk of cash. But then again, they don't have the credit built up, or sometimes in some cases, no credit at all. Also, sometimes you'll find somebody who is asset rich, cash poor, and credit poor. So I can pull off of those assets without the borrower ever having to come up with any money themselves to help them purchase another asset, if that's what they're looking to do. If they find some, you know, I don't, you know, judge anybody's business plans. I mean, if they think that, if they're in that pickle, if they think that buying another asset is the way to go, you know, sometimes it is. Maybe they'll make enough money off of that to solve all their problems. I'm not one to criticize anyone else's business plans. There's probably people a lot smarter than I am, see things that I don't see. So I just look at the raw details of what's in front of me. And I say, does this make sense for me to lend on? Do I feel safe and comfy? And if I do, and if it's a good enough return, that's always variable by every deal is different. But if the return's good relative to the comfort level, then I'll usually just green light it.
Wow, that's really, really intriguing. Talk to me. You guys said you're also doing something unique in doing seller finance deals where you are just selling to an end buyer. Was that right? Or did I mishear you?
Yes. So we still do acquisitions. That's not the biggest part of our business, but we'll basically acquire properties with the sole goal of doing dispositions as soon as we get it. So if we end up buying a property for, let's say, 30 cents on the dollar, we're going to quickly then try to offload it for 90 cents on the dollar just to get that spread in between. And sometimes if somebody's got a down payment that's decent sized, you know, 20, 30 cents, well, then all of my risk is gone because I've recouped my capital. So why wouldn't I just hold the note? And then I can avoid paying the capital gains taxes, you know, all at once. And so that can be very helpful for us on from a tax liability standpoint.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. If you can get an infinite return on an investment, why not? Or close to it. That makes all the sense in the world. That's really intriguing. What have been some things that you've learned in this business that were surprising, I guess, that you really didn't expect out of the gate?
I was shocked at how many lenders charge upfront junk fees. I couldn't believe it. And also, I was surprised how many lenders require monthly payments, even for short-term mortgages, which is overhead. So to a flipper, that's a nightmare because they're having to come out of pocket for repairs and monthly fees. So we've kind of become a flipper's dream where they come to us, they put, you know, only the cash up toward the purchase, or if they have some collateral, they can just do that instead. And then basically from there on out, they don't owe us a dime until the thing sells or they refinance us out, which is pretty fun.
Yeah, because we're seeing a lot of times in the private lender space, you know, 2 and 10 or 4 and 12, we're seeing a lot of, you know, and I'm out of that game. But when I was in the single family flipping space, I mean, those were not uncommon fees. So how are you making money on this if you're not charging those types of fees?
Right. So we don't even charge points, which is pretty wild. So it's very cut and dry. What I do is I look at a flat amount. So we don't do percentages or anything like that. If I'm loaning, let's say $50,000, I'm going to say, you know, $50,000, you know, you can have it for a year, pay, you know, pay us back in, you know, 9 months, a year. Let's just say it's a year in this example. Maybe I make 10 grand, but that's all I make. I mean, it's a flat 10, you know, never anything else that goes along with it. There's no hidden fees, no appraisals, no nothing. So it's basically, you know, exactly what I'm making on day one. And you know that on the 50, I'm loaning out 50, 60 is coming back, and it's the easiest paperwork imaginable. So
that really is. I mean, so you set flat fees up front. I'm certain, I would imagine you have contingencies in there for the duration of the loan. I mean, you can't
say sure.
You ran for 10 years.
No, it's usually our two most popular loan periods are 1 year and 6 months. So you can see that we generally attract flippers and, you know, a lot more because that's usually their time windows. Sometimes we'll build one in where it's like an option at 6 months and then they get an option at a year, just depending on how long they think they're going to go for. But it'll be cheaper the less the length is. Run that flat fee down.
Right. And that makes sense. I mean, there was a boat and RV storage facility we just sold last week where we brought in some private money to fill in the gap between the first and because I didn't want any money of my own in the deal. And there was a minimum payment due on it, which is fine. I mean, it was like, hey, you're going to loan this. And no matter when I pay it back, if it's within the first 36 months, this is what you owe. And which was great. So it sounds like a similar thing to what you guys are doing right there. Is that a way of getting around? Because I've seen this, you know, and as much as I hate it, because the state will charge you 18% interest on a state tax that's due. And then they say that you can't charge more than like 8%. I think in Tennessee, the maximum interest rate that you can charge on a loan is 8.75%, right? So the state set these rates. Is that a way by defining the dollar amount and not the interest rate that you get around kind of those state laws that define maximum interest rates?
You can. And there's actually some great ways to get around owner-occupy with the Dodd-Frank, you know, deals as well. And that's kind of some things that we figured out along the way. You don't necessarily have to do a loan. You don't necessarily have to do a mortgage. You can do a purchase with basically give them a first right. You know, that's another way to go about it too. So I can just go and purchase the property and then give them a first right of refusal, which are two separate transactions. So it sort of behaves potentially, you know, like one. But again, that option to purchase is optional. It's not debt, right? So there's no debt instrument if it's, you know, you can't secure something that's optional, right? So
yeah, that's really intriguing. That was something I always wondered about. I would see these money lenders play in what I would probably say some gray space, which we were all happy borrowing money and they were all happy lending it. No one
right.
would squeal, but it was, you know, there were rates that were far above that. And you're like,
okay. Right.
you know, whatever. It works for me, so I'm going to keep quiet. But that's really interesting. I always wondered about that. Like, what are some ways to creatively solve this problem on the lender front? That's really, really intriguing. And you said you guys don't really have a whole lot of takebacks right now. Is there ever any fear of that with a correction or anything else?
So the way that, because we're so low LTV, I think that inherently just prevents a lot of, because nobody's going to let us have, you know, the property for that amount of money. We would let them sell it, you know, obviously before that happened. And also another reason we don't have as many takebacks is because if things are working, oftentimes if somebody needs more time, I'll say, hey, you know, this is what I'll charge you for an extension, you know, so we can actually make some money off of extensions, which is a whole lot better than finding a new client. You know, your existing customer is a lot easier to make money off of than a new customer, which has an acquisition cost and wasting my office employees' time and, you know, this and that. So, you know, we try not to, and again, we're not in the business of holding property, so we would end up just selling it anyways. So,
right. Yeah, absolutely makes sense. Blake, is there anything else, or let me ask this question a different way. What are some things I should have asked you that I haven't, that you'd like to share with our listeners?
That's a great question. I would say just be very careful, especially with like online private money, that whether it's hard money or private lenders, because there are so many people who say that they're a direct lender, but they're really not a direct lender. They're actually just daisy chaining, you know, loans. And then also they're going to charge you upfront fee. So never pay an upfront fee unless it's to an attorney or a title company. Never send a wire to an individual, and you better vet that title company and attorney. Make sure they're a real person. Look them up. Make sure they've got reviews. Make sure they've got a good web presence. If they don't, you should be very concerned.
Oh yeah, absolutely. That's interesting you say that, because I go back to the days of starting out and scrambling for capital. And yeah, I just saw so much of that. I'm like, this is all suspect. This is all absolutely suspect. So you bring up some great points there that maybe if you're just starting out in this space that, you know, you really should be paying attention to and looking out for. Blake, thank you for your time today. Let's jump here into the final four questions.
Great.
The first one is this: what is one digital tool or resource you find you can't live without?
Google Drive is just fantastic for us. We love it. We are a cloud-based company. We're on Drive exclusively. We pay extra for the extra services that it offers. So we just can't say enough about the Google and the Drive products.
Right, man. That's absolutely fantastic. What is one mistake you could help our listeners avoid, and how would you avoid it?
Don't trust ARVs. Don't trust ARVs. What I mean by that is you can go into a market, and when somebody says there's an after repair value of, you know, $200,000 on this house, you may not realize the amount of work it would take to get it to sell for that price. You know, so two caveats to that: beware of low renovation estimates and high ARVs. Those two things can kill your profit margins and sometimes take your profit margin away entirely.
Oh man. Yep. You said it, especially if it's a wholesale deal, you got to do your numbers yourself. That's for sure. Question number three: when it comes to investing in the world, what's one thing you're doing right now to make the world a better place?
So one thing, by doing some of these lower cost loans that a lot of banks won't touch, we're, you know, preventing loss in some lower end neighborhoods. And we're also putting some capital into some neighborhoods that probably wouldn't get it. So I would say that we're, you know, kind of helping, you know, downtrodden areas by doing what we're doing. Certainly can't do it alone, but it's, you know, we're taking steps toward it.
That's awesome. Blake, if our listeners want to get in touch with you, learn more about you or your loan products, what is the best way to do that?
The easiest way is our website, which is selbyrentals.com. It's on my hat here. I'm not sure if it'll show up on screen there for you, but selbyrentals.com has everything from contact info to videos to everything that you need to know about private lending.
Awesome. Blake, thank you for your time today. I do appreciate it.
Thank you too, Sam.
Hey, thanks for listening to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate podcast. If you can do me a favor and subscribe and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, whatever platform it is you use to listen, if you can do that for us, that would be a fantastic help to the show. It helps us both attract new listeners as well as rank higher on those directories. So appreciate you listening. Thanks so much, and hope to catch you on the next episode.